so few people know how much the world is going to change. I think that's the crazy thing. You enter a crystal ball, you start to see how the world's going to change. And it's insane because you can start putting bets on what the world will look like in 2030 when the vast majority of people are still living their lives and really not aware of how it's going to change. But the one plant medicine that's really changed my life, completely changed my life, is one called San Pedro, which is Huachuma in Quechuan. And it's, again, the plant medicine of the Andes, and the Andean tribes would treat it as the grandfather to the ayahuasca, ayahuasca's grandmother. And it's really seen as a heart-opening medicine. And for me, it really got me back in my body. I'm sure most of the listeners will have better protocols than I do. And the reason for that is I travel a horrible amount. And I find it very difficult to retain my perfect weight. And so I will say the things that have worked really well for me in keeping me kind of intact.
Herzlich willkommen zu Mission Gesundheit. Ich bin Dr. Hadiseli. Mein heutiger Gast hat eine Leidenschaft, die auch mich seit Jahren begeistert: das Podcasten. Denn was gibt es Spannenderes, als mit den klügsten Köpfen unserer Zeit über Gesundheit, Zukunft und die großen Fragen des Lebens zu sprechen? Und mein Gast macht genau das.
Experte der Woche.
Darüber spreche ich heute mit Julian Isser. Er ist Host des Beyond Tomorrow Podcasts und hat bereits mehr als 1500 Interviews mit führenden Köpfen aus Wirtschaft, Wissenschaft und Technologie geführt. Ich wollte von ihm wissen, was lernt man aus so vielen Gesprächen? Welche Muster ziehen sich durch die Leben außergewöhnlich erfolgreicher und gesunder Menschen? Und wie blickt er auf die Zukunft der Longevity-Forschung? Hört selbst, was er geantwortet hat, als er mal einer Gast statt in der Host-Rolle war. Und als kleiner Disclaimer, Julian lebt in London und spricht Englisch. Deswegen haben wir in dieser Woche mal wieder eine englische Folge.
Amazing that you're here. Thank you very much for coming to my practice. It's called Nexus Precision Diagnostics. And as the name suggests, it's all about preventive medicine. But we have something in common. Next to our Middle Eastern heritage, you and I were podcasters. How did it come about with you having a very successful podcast?
Hadi, first of all, thank you so much for having me here. It's my first time in Berlin for 12 years. The last time I was here, I was auditioning for opera school.
And it makes
In Berlin. And it makes me realize how much life changes. Yeah. If you'd asked 22-year-old Julian, next time you're going to be in Berlin, you'll be speaking on stage about longevity, I would have laughed hysterically and thought, what the hell is this longevity thing? It's amazing how many lives we have in a lifetime. But the reason why I started the podcast was basically an amalgamation of all my lived experiences. So I was a journalist at Newsweek, and I wrote and I spoke to many, many amazing CEOs around the world talking about AI, longevity, all these amazing areas. And I really thought to myself, no one is getting access to all this amazing information. So how can I share more of this information with the world? I was also unfortunately struck with a number of different accidents when I was younger, which basically made me look inwards at a very young age. So age 21, had a terrible accident, nearly killed me, ended up being bedbound, couldn't walk properly for I think 10 months or some crutches, couldn't run for 2 years. And I spiraled into deep depression, anxiety, panic attacks all the time. And it gave me an amazing opportunity to figure shit out myself. Because at the time, the healthcare system in the UK wasn't able to look after me. And so I went on a big journey to figure out what was happening, tried a bunch of things, and went on this kind of journey of healing and then health optimization. So yeah, there's two parts to it. Newsweek, the journey myself of going from suffering to healing. And then the final part is I just am super curious. So I wanted to have these conversations myself, and I saw what was happening in the industry, in the podcast industry, and I felt there was a lack of heart-led communication. So three reasons why I started the podcast, and it's been an amazing journey so far.
So from all the interviews that you've had, what specifically stood out for you? Is there anything, is there a pattern that you see in longevity in general? And is there anything specific that stands out for you where you said, I need to do something?
I think the main thread that I've noticed in this world is you have, if you want to see change in this world, you have to be the one to act. And so I looked at how the world was kind of shaping up and I thought, this can't be it. Mm. I know who I am. I know I'm a good person. I've got a kind heart. We need more of those people stepping up. And it's hard because you also have to be strong and resilient. It is a tough journey to found anything, to be a podcaster, to be a creator, to be a founder. It is incredibly difficult. You have to be super resilient. That was the main reason I said, yeah, let's make this happen. And I think we are so used to being naysayers, as in society. We just came back from the Enhanced Games and, you know, 90% of people look at the Enhanced Games and think, what the hell is this? It's like just a bunch of crap. But because I was having these conversations with these leaders and getting to know them personally, I could feel the truth within them. And I wanted to expose more of this truth and authenticity that these people were sharing with me, because from afar, someone might be looking at someone in longevity or AI or in the Enhanced Games and thinking, what a narcissist who just cares about themselves. Mm. But a lot of these builders are actually building because they care. They genuinely want to make the world a better place for many people. And so I felt maybe I could do a better job at communicating what these people are trying to say to the world.
So on the Enhanced Games, you know, there is a misconception that it's all, you know, full on doping.
Yeah,
but they were only allowed to use FDA-approved drugs, right? Mm. So did it live up to the expectation, in your opinion?
So it's funny because I've interviewed Aaron D'Souza, the founder, and Christian Angermayer as well. And I think what we forget is where the Enhanced Games is going to be in like 10, 15, 20 years is going to be crazy. Like, we're going to have full-on, like, half cyborgs and blades for legs and crazy enhancements and gene therapies maybe in 30, 40, 50 years might allow us to fly. And it sounds crazy, but the future of enhancement is genuinely crazy. But right now, it's like it's little tiny steps. As an example, I spoke to one of the athletes after. I was doing a little interview with her and I said, what was the most effective medicine therapeutic protocol you took? And she said, Adderall. I was taking Adderall. It helped me focus more. I just thought to myself, like, okay.
Not real enhancement, right?
Yeah, it's not really an enhancement. And I asked Aaron D'Souza, will the athletes be on peptides a year ago? And he said, no, it's too advanced. And so, like, even peptides at this point were a step too far for a lot of the athletes. And so, really, the world saw, okay, a bunch of athletes that were on steroids, but what the difference was they were put on a four-month protocol with the best trainers and nutritionists, and their data was, I don't know how many, I think it was 935 data points per athlete. They were the most measured athletes. And so they got, it was more about performance medicine rather than steroids. Yeah. And so did it live up? A lot of athletes beat their personal bests way into their 30s, which is amazing. Were there a bunch of world records? No, there was just one. Yeah. That was a bit of a surprise and I think a bit of a letdown for some people. But do I think the Enhanced Games is going to bounce back and 2027 is going to be even stronger? Yeah, I do. I'm very bullish on it.
Do you know if it was a success commercially?
Well, they've just raised, they just had an IPO at a $1.2 billion dollar valuation. I don't think they broke even on this event, but they raised $31 million from just sponsors, which is pretty incredible for an event like it.
Absolutely.
And they've really, it's a great kind of concept. I'm sure Harvard Business School will have some sort of module on the whole premise of the doping Olympics. Mm. But they really rode that wave. They knew smartly that they know it's not like a doping Olympics, but they rode the wave and they got a lot of press for it. Yeah.
So, you know, you've been actively following and participating in that longevity space and, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar market. You know, what specifically fascinates you when it comes to longevity?
So I think longevity mean many things to many people. Mm. And for me, I kind of sometimes say that I've hijacked the longevity industry with my interpretation of it. For me, it's about human flourishing. Mm. It's about equality. It's about giving every single human being the opportunity to live a long, healthy, happy, prosperous life. And for me, the mission won't be made until we've given every single human being the tools to thrive in this world. It's going to take a long time. It's about looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs and saying, well, sure, we might start top down, but we have to really think about the people at the lower level as well. And, you know, we said at the beginning, being from the Middle East, like we understand what it's like to not have your basic needs met. And like, how does that evolve as a concept? First of all, it's about thinking about access and equity when we think about the longevity therapeutics, which I know will happen, undoubtedly. They might cost a lot at the beginning, but they'll quickly go down. It's about thinking about the exposome, this whole exposure that we get to the environment. It's saying that what happens in London affects people in Hyderabad, which affects people in Chile, which affects people in Brunei. So it's about this oneness. And it's also, and tomorrow I'm going to be speaking at the event about the nervous system, that being the new frontier of prevention. And as someone who had a nervous system that was completely shot by accidents and trauma, I understand how important it is for this longevity space. And a final thing to add, it's funny because we went from biohacking and now people are talking about bioharmony and you should be doing this and this to relax and, you know, meditation, all that. But these have been practices that have been with us for many, many millennia.
Thousands of years, yeah.
Thousands of years. And the funny thing about longevity is just, it's funny someone adding a new concept, a new spin on something that has been around for so long and trying to monetize it. But what we're really trying to do is get back to the village. Just getting back to having Tirtha, our grandma, there cooking us the food of our, you know, of the land, and going out onto the field and working the land and breathing the fresh air and doing the exercise and singing and laughing and crying and being with our emotions. And it's an amazing space, and I know we'll get there. And I'm interested to see how. It's important to mention AI in this whole pursuit, because AI, for some people, is seen as the thing that's going to squeeze us or it's going to set us free.
Is there anything specifically that you see that is absolutely overhyped?
So I need to caveat here, because you're a physician, I'm not. It's really important to say this. So whatever I say is always going to be from the mouthpiece of all the physicians that I've spoken to. What I would say, and this is coming from Eric Verdin from the book, and again, anecdotal, really real anecdotal information that I've been picking up. But when you look at peptides and GLP-1s, GLP-1s have been seen as this kind of solution to fix all. And I think for some people, it's incredible, right?
Works fantastically.
It does, yeah. And there are limitations.
Yeah.
And there are also, there's a bit of a question mark over actually the long-term effects as well. And so for certain individuals, it's going to work fantastically and it should be used. But for others, I've been thinking recently, talking about it before, about been thinking more about Retta and GLP-1s as well. I've gained quite a lot of weight the last year because I travel so much and I've just been so focused on what I'm doing, more sedentary. But yeah, it feels that GLP-1s without a protocol, without looking at the data, without is a recipe for, I wouldn't say disaster, but that, yeah, that there's potential issues there. And then with peptides, it's just amazing how peptides have just blown up.
Yeah.
And the confusing thing for myself is just the whole spectrum of opinions within the longevity doctor community.
Yeah.
That's the thing that surprises me most. I speak to some and I see them posting, really shouting from the roof about peptides. And then others, and also influencers like Brian Johnson, who are just like, I'm just not touching that. We're just at the beginning of the journey with it. And so it's, what is the, you know, the fix? What is the thing that one needs and one wants? It's hard to say. Like, do you feel great on it? Like, what are your biomarkers saying? And you'll probably have a far better answer than I do when it comes to this.
I well I think I agree with Eric on NAD infusions.
Yeah.
Which is a big hype. I think he stated on your podcast that I've seen that there is no, you know, strong evidence for NAD infusions, but he's open to NAD precursors.
Yeah.
So I side with him on that one.
Yeah, with NR especially. Yeah, it's interesting with NAD IVs, and I speak with many people about it because for many, many years, people have been using them and have been coming back and been spending the money.
Yeah.
And so Eric told me it's placebo. Placebo is a strong effect. And then potentially the B3, I think he mentioned that, but it should be 60 cents rather than $700. The big question I still have looming over this is, why do so many people keep going back to it if they feel so good? Usually it's like, okay, I feel somewhat better. It's not worth $700, but they keep coming back. So
there must be something to it, right?
Yeah. I'm intrigued by it because it's like, I don't think people do it just because it's a longevity protocol and they're going to live longer. They might, but, and it's a sensitive area within the space as well.
It's interesting that Brian Johnson says it's too risky for him, but you know, he went to Roatan and had this what is it called,
follistatin gene therapy.
Yeah, gene therapy, which was not too extreme for him.
For any DIVs, he doesn't do.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay, that's interesting.
No peptides. I mean.
Oh, peptides.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I think he mentioned to us at Enhanced Games that he'd started experimenting with one. I can't remember which one, but he'd started a protocol and I think what he really was trying to underline was dosage and the effects.
Yeah.
I think, don't quote me on this, but I think it was a peptide. And he said that by increasing the dosage, I don't know the exact number, by X percent, that one peptide put him in a pre-diabetic category or something. It was having such a huge effect.
Yeah, I've seen that too, but I'm spacing out on the peptide that he used.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, if we flip my previous question around, is there anything that is absolutely underrated and that is, you know, blows your mind?
Gratitude for me has just been such a powerful tool just to connect with myself and to forgive myself and to just feel more connected to others and to forgive myself and others. And then for me personally, I know they're not legal in Germany, but plant medicine and psychedelics are being talked about more and more. I've been on a number of plant medicine journeys with therapists and Peruvian shamans, and I've worked with psilocybin.
Ayahuasca?
Not ayahuasca, and I wouldn't take ayahuasca. It's just, I think for me, too much of a psychedelic experience. I'm very sensitive, so I feel things a lot, feel a lot of energy. Psilocybin for me was really intense. But the one plant medicine that's really changed my life, completely changed my life, is one called San Pedro, which is Huachuma in Quechuan. And it's, again, the plant medicine of the Andes, and the Andean tribes would treat it as the grandfather to the ayahuasca, ayahuasca's grandmother. And it's really seen as a heart-opening medicine. And for me, it really got me back in my body. And I would love to, I'm doing another journey in 2 months. And I've actually asked a friend of mine, Ramses Alkaida, who runs Neurable, for one of his BCI devices to wear and actually to understand like what is happening at a neurological level when I'm taking this. But when I think about my immune health, I haven't really been ill for 2 years since my first journey with San Pedro. And I'd love to know why.
Yeah,
but it's something. I get ill, but it's just I'm never in bed. So immune health has been really impacted. N of one, it might be other things, but I really see it as being one of the reasons for it. But like for me personally, and again, just for your listeners, I went on a long journey of working with therapists and really understanding who I was before I even delved into that, because it opens up a world that can be quite frightening and scary, especially given the generational trauma and the traumas that the people from the region would have gone through potentially. So
You should get your blood drawn before you do it next time and then afterwards and see, you know, is there a change?
Yeah, I would actually.
It's super interesting.
That is actually very interesting. Would you recommend actually doing it just before and just after?
Could be a day before, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Cool, interesting. Yeah.
Because nothing changes dramatically overnight.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually scared to do it. You know, okay. I'm very happy with myself right now, and I'm afraid to unlock or unbox anything that I've put in a box and shoved down deep.
Yeah.
And that keeps me away from trying it. You know, I'm super curious. I would love to, but I actually don't want to deal with the consequences.
Wow. Yeah. It's and that is usually like one of the reasons. But it's funny because I did my first major San Pedro journey nearly 2 years ago, and I started the podcast 4 or 5 months after. Mm. And it was actually in the journey that I had the calling to start the podcast. And so it was the thing that actually really catalyzed it and gave me the confidence as well. And I look back now at my first like 3-4 months of episodes. I don't envy anyone starting something new. It is so difficult to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
It's brutal. It's almost like abuse. You're just all your traumas coming out, and you're remembering being in the school playground as a 8-year-old, and people point at you and everything. But that's growth as well. Yeah. And it's so I'm very grateful for the plant medicine. So
maybe you'll give me a call before you go next time.
And yeah, for sure.
Let's do it together.
But it's also like, I do want to say that San Pedro is very gentle, like very gentle. It's not psychedelic. It's like, but it brings up stuff as well.
Yeah. I've listened to Brian Johnson speaking about his DMT experience, and like it's a different world or a different dimension. You know, I'm super curious to see that. But it just scares the shit out of me, to be honest.
Yeah, and look, it's funny with Brian, because I saw him again last week, and I saw him twice last year, and the difference was stark. Last year, he was very robotic, and this year, he was in a flow state that it really surprised me.
Yeah.
He went from being a, you know, quite a square, I wouldn't say thinker, but quite rigid, and now he's like just talking just like, and it really surprised me. And he's not talking at the moment anyway about the Don't Die movement as much. It's more about love. And
maybe because, love entered into his life.
Yeah, with Kate and also through the psychedelics.
Yeah.
I think they worked intertwined, you know, so it's...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Getting back to longevity.
Yeah.
The longevity escape velocity. Mm. Do you think we'll live to see it? And again, you know, when you speak to so many people, and is it 2030? Is it 2035? Will we ever see it? What's your personal opinion?
I think the question really comes down to AI. Hmm. Are we underrating or overrating the progress of AI? That's really it. Hmm. And it's funny, we're releasing an episode with Dario Unutmaz tomorrow, and we've had a few episodes with Peter Diamandis. And what I've noticed is that one's timeline of when longevity escape velocity will happen and superintelligence is really based on someone's age. And so someone like Daria or Peter, who are in their 60s, are more optimistic and more bullish because they need LEV to happen
sooner than later.
And so if you say it's going to happen in 5-10 years, that also creates the urgency.
Yeah.
And so you have then younger people in the longevity space who are 20 who are like, it's going to happen in 2050, 2060. Yeah. I don't know what the next, how powerful the next Mythos model is going to be, or the next, people are saying that they've actually already hit artificial general intelligence. But they're just waiting for the actual society to be ready for the impact and the effects of these models. And so they're queuing them up, and they're just releasing them bit by bit by bit. But it's going to come down to that. Like Demis Hassabis has said that we could cure all diseases within 10 years. Mm. LEV, I don't know. I think based on how technology is going, I would say 2035, we're going to get the drip of solutions and to start definitely like drastically slowing aging down. Again, this is an amalgamation of what everyone has told me. Do I think it's going to be a specific therapeutic that's going to get us there? I think it's just going to be a combo. And yeah, Daria and a lot of these guys are saying, and Eric, it's when you start curing cancer, when you start curing dementia, then you start just living longer. And then all of a sudden you're taking this therapeutic and that therapeutic. And it's going to be a fascinating time. It is genuinely the craziest time we're entering, because so few people know how much the world is going to change. I think that's the crazy thing. And when I'm in San Francisco, which I was a few weeks ago, you enter a crystal ball. You start to see how the world's going to change. And it's insane, because you can start putting bets on what the world will look like in 2030 when the vast majority of people are still, like, unbeknownst to them, living their lives and really not aware of how it's going to change. What amazes me with SF is that just a few people in San Francisco, maybe a few people in DC and a few people in Beijing and one or two in Tel Aviv and one in Riyadh are shaping the universe, our known universe. And yeah, so I think if anyone wants to be a part in this future, as in to write the future, there are probably like one or two places that you need to be right now. Yeah, I would say definitely Silicon Valley. Like, that is, it's amazing. San Francisco kind of lost its edge during COVID and people moved to Austin and to other places in the US and Miami.
Also for tax reasons.
Yeah, for tax reasons. And now with AI, it's just like, okay, you have to be an SF. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, Sinclair with Life Bio is, you know, using some of the Menaka factors and actually try to give people eyesight that turn blind. And so I think this is fantastic. It's an amazing time to be alive, you know, because we, you know, are part of this movement now, and maybe we'll get to see the longevity escape velocity.
I think so. I think it's just crazy. You know, before I said last time I was in Berlin, I was an opera singer. And for me, again, thinking about Brian, his spirituality, or his journey with the psychedelics, it's so interesting, because I remember being 9 years old and I went to choir school. I was taken by my mum to the Catholic Cathedral in London, Westminster Cathedral. And I would sing there every day as a boarding school chorister. And I just remember driving in with my mum and asking my mum, "Mum, are you going to die one day?" And I couldn't fathom that my mum wouldn't be there. It was just something that my brain could not comprehend. I was like, this has to be a glitch. There is no way that like I could be without my mum. And it's funny, because throughout my teens, I just really couldn't grasp the concept of death. It felt like a glitch. And then I started to question my faith. You know, I was raised Christian, and in the UK there's a lot of atheism, so and people who agnostic, and people would at school would be like, "What, you believe in God? That's like ridiculous." And so I lost my faith, and I had a lot of thoughts in my 20s around, like, especially with this accident that happened to me, around death, like what happens. And it was through exploration, but then with plant medicine, that I started to realize that the plant medicine really makes you see life in Technicolor, in 5D. Not tripping, but everything slows down. And so you start seeing the divine in the smallest details. And then the serendipity starts and synchronicities, and you start just saying, like, look, that there has to be a God. There has to be something out there. And so I'm in the longevity space now because I believe there's beauty in living longer and living a rich, full life. And life is phenomenal. I want to live as long as possible. I love life so much. But is it coming out of a place of fear? Not anymore for me. I genuinely believe we're either in a simulation that is set up by a godly figure, or we are in a world that has been created by our creator. Yeah.
Do you have a specific routine that you stick to? I mean, you know, it's all about protocols or routines nowadays. What do you do?
I would say that, and we talked off air about genetics and my family being from Lebanon, and this is a really important point because I'm sure most of the listeners will have better protocols than I do. And the reason for that is I travel a horrible amount and I find it very difficult to retain my perfect weight. And so I will say the things that have worked really well for me in keeping me kind of intact. I would say in terms of mindset for me, meditating 15 minutes every morning for the last like 9 years and doing breath work have been incredible. I do fascial release maneuver as well, the human garage one. And then also journaling has been just phenomenal for, and I do a technique where I don't leave the page with my pen for 5 minutes. I think it's called automatic something writing. Mm-hmm. And that for me just gets me in my body and in the present moment. Really taking time in nature. So I've got a beautiful balcony in London and I hear the bird singing and tweeting in the morning and it just gets me into the moment and feeling grateful. So a lot of kind of mindset work. My episodes with Peter Diamandis 100% changed my life. Just how we think, how we can change our mindset from scarcity to abundance, to thinking, being curious about the world, being optimistic, have been game changing. When I'm in London, I say that when I'm in my home city, my health improves every day by 1%. And when I'm away, it declines by 1%. Mm. And unfortunately, right now, I'm spending more time on the road. But when I'm in London, I do what everyone does. So I exercise, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. I try and sleep, you know, at least 7 hours a night. And I will do everything that I'm meant to do. There's nothing that I'm doing that's kind of out of the ordinary. In terms of supplement snack, I'm taking more creatine than I probably should right now. I'm just experimenting and getting tested on that, but I'm taking 15 to 20 grams a day. I know. Maybe you can tell me off with that. But again, that's another one of the question marks, which is really frustrating because Eric told me that 5 grams, you shouldn't take more. But then you have people like Rhonda Patrick and others that are saying you should take much more. Yeah. And so it's that is an area that I'm really disappointed at, which is it's frustrating. It's just, rightfully so, certain longevity doctors are being conservative with their estimates and saying you should take this. Maybe they're covering their backs as well. And you have others that are saying, no, you have to be taking X amount. So it's confusing, like really confusing. And it's a question I constantly ask doctors. So what would you say is the...
It varies from person to person a lot. Okay. I think a good daily dose is something between 3 and 5 grams, you know, and that's probably what Eric said. But if you are underslept, and you need to be on your best game mentally, you can go up to 20 grams. And it has a significant effect. It might be placebo. I've tried it myself, you know, but it worked amazingly. You know, after a 4-hour night, had to take a red eye early in the morning, first flight out. And I had a very difficult and important negotiation same day. So I took 20 grams in the morning and I was fine. And it could be a placebo. I don't know. Yeah. There's no good study. So this, you know, this is the disclaimer, you know, is this an N=1 experiment? So definitely, it's just me. But Rhonda Patrick speaks about it. And she, I think her maintenance dose is like 10 grams a day. And she goes up to 20 when she needs it. Yeah. But 20 grams on a steady state, I feel is a little bit too much. But you tell me how you feel.
Yeah, I think it's... I'm on 4 hours sleep. I just got a flight this morning. So I did take 15 grams. But I think it's... What would you say is the main biomarker that you would be concerned to see increase as a result of more creatine?
I mean, it's being said that it takes a toll on your kidneys, but only at very high doses. Okay. And I haven't seen any study yet that showed me, you know, a dose-dependent curve.
Yeah.
Kidneys, and then it varies from person to person.
So. And how long would that have to beef going for? Like 6 months, a year?
So probably more like 3 months.
Okay, well, yeah. Good to know. Yeah, yeah that's yeah. good to
but
know.
But again, don't quote me on this one, but I don't remember all the studies, but if you get your blood checked on a regular basis, you would see it.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. Good to know. Apart from that, I've been taking some Urolithin A recently. Yeah. And I take magnesium and
vitamin D.
Vitamin D, especially for the Arab, the Middle Eastern heritage, which makes a huge difference as well.
So my final question is always, what advice do you give our listeners or watchers that you've gathered from, all your interviews, your personal experience, everything that you've experienced in your life? Is there, a top three of advices that you would give?
I would say the first one is just believe in yourself. Mm. Like just have that conviction that you're going to figure it out. The amount of times I've had to say to myself over the last 6 months, 12 months, Julian, you're going to figure it out. Mm. And every time I do.
Yeah.
And it's funny because sometimes we avoid challenge or we give up. And we regret it. And through this journey, I know what my end goal is. And I know I'm going to figure it out. I know that tomorrow I might not have the answers. I might not have the answers today, but I'm going to figure it out. And so just taking every step as it comes. I'd also say it's amazing how much my life has changed since I've taken myself away from the group I was surrounding myself with. So we are the equal sum of the five people we spend most time with. It's not just a saying. People always say that saying. It's just the truth. It's just the truth. And so if you spend time with people in, let's say, Silicon Valley, or you spend time with entrepreneurs or whoever, you're quickly going to become very similar to them. Mm. That's been a huge game changer for me.
One final advice?
Sing more. It's such a random one, but as a former singer, like singing gives me so much joy and stimulates the vagus nervous system. It gets you in your body, parasympathetic nervous system. It brings so much joy. You connect with others. Singing is just such an underrated longevity hack.
No, this is great. Especially coming from you. I cannot sing, for the life of me, but I'll try.
Well, you can hum. Humming has the same effect. Like
actually do hum because it releases nitric oxide.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do it for health purposes, and it's amazing. Love it.
Yeah, I love that.
This has been amazing, Julian. Thank you very much for coming to Berlin and spending some time with me. I honestly envy you in a very good way. And look up to you for what you've created in a very, very short time. It's really amazing. And it shows the passion and the dedication that you put into creating this podcast and basically a platform. I know it doesn't end with the, it maybe started all with the podcast, but it doesn't end with the podcast. And it's fantastic what you've achieved. And it's so important that you keep doing what you're doing because you're educating so many people, including myself. With the content that you create. And thank you very much. I really mean it.
As my coach says, I'm going to receive everything you just said and say thank you so much.
I
bet your words mean more than you know.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for an amazing conversation. Yeah.
Die Fakten der Folge.
Aus unserem Gespräch habe ich vor allem drei Dinge mitgenommen. Die erfolgreichsten und gesündesten Menschen setzen konsequent auf die Grundlagen, also Schlaf, Bewegung, Ernährung und starke Beziehungen. Viele der größten Gesundheitshebel sind heute bereits bekannt. Entscheidend ist weniger das Wissen als die konsequente Umsetzung. Die Zukunft der Longevity-Forschung ist unglaublich spannend, aber die wichtigste Investition in ein langes und gesundes Leben beginnt schon heute mit unseren täglichen Gewohnheiten.
Random Reminder.
Random Reminder. Geh während eines Telefonats. Ich plädiere ja hier immer für mehr Bewegung. Und da habe ich dieses Mal etwas, das wir wirklich alle machen können. Wenn du telefonierst, bleib nicht sitzen. Steh auf und geh während des Gesprächs ein paar Schritte. Schon leichte Bewegung verbessert die Durchblutung, aktiviert den Kreislauf und erhöht die Sauerstoffversorgung des Gehirns. Der Effekt? Du bist auf wacher, konzentrierter und sitzt am Ende des Tages deutlich weniger. Also mein Random Reminder heute, wenn du sowieso telefonierst, kannst du dabei auch etwas für deinen Körper tun. Bis zum nächsten Mal, bleib gesund und neugierig.
Das war Mission Gesundheit mit mir, Dr. Hadi Sadeh. Danke, dass ihr Teil dieser wachsenden Community seid. Unterstützt den Podcast gerne mit einem Like, Kommentar oder einem Follow. Bis zum nächsten Mal, bleibt gesund und neugierig.